in the culture that we're in, it's laughed about and joked about quite a bit among peers, right? Or a group of men, or I don't know, but maybe a group of women, maybe not quite so much. But it's not really seen as really all that bad anymore. It's just kind of, yeah, it's what guys do, right? And that makes it difficult when you're struggling with your own values, and you grew up in a church, and you know that this is wrong, but you're hearing from the other side that this is normal, this is okay, and so you wrestle with that. It wasn't until probably going into marriage early years, and you know, realizing this thing's really got a hold of me. I'm trying to quit at this point now. You'd think it's just an easy willpower type thing. Hey, I just need to stop. And that would be the idea. Hey, I got to stop. And I would go a period of time, and I would come back, and I would view pornography again. And as soon as that happened, it would be followed by this overwhelming shame, right? It was, I can't believe I did that. I failed again. I would really, really, you know, get strong, and I'd say, I am never going to do this again. I'd pray to God and swear to Him, I'm never going to do this again. Ask Him to take the temptation away from me, and that would last again for a while. As time went on, it would happen again. I'd relapse, or I would view pornography again, and this time it was worse. You know, now I'm breaking promises to God, and I really amp it up. You know, I'm gonna try even harder this time. And this cycle goes on and on. I mean, thousands of times for me. At some point, I just gave in. I said, you know what? I can't beat this. I can't beat this, and I don't even know where to go for help. I got to keep it secret. I just got to keep the lid on. You know, it's a really embarrassing thing. So if this gets out, you know, that the shame of this would just be too much for me. And so I try to keep the lid on, and I do a decent job of it, I guess you'd say. Go through marriage, probably 5 years into marriage, and my wife discovers a pornographic image on my phone, and what is this all about? And part of me is like, hey, you're overreacting. This is super normal. You know, guys do this. And the other part of me goes, yeah, okay, this, I got to confess and tell her what's going on. And so we went away for a weekend, and we talked, and I told her, you know, how far back this problem went in my life. And she was really, really, really impacted. She was really hurt by this, a lot more than I would have expected. You know, she felt cheated on. She felt devalued. Like, perhaps she wasn't beautiful enough. So it was tough going through that, and I came out of that with another level of commitment to this, saying, okay, this is bad. I'm ruining stuff. I'm now risking marriage. This is bad. And so with a new sense of determination, I start on to keep the lid on tighter. And I do a decent job. I go, you know, I don't, a decent job. I probably went 6 months. And then it happened again. And I continued right into that same cycle of shame and asking for forgiveness, swearing to never do it again, relapsing, shame, round and round. And, I can't tell Heather. She would be destroyed again. You know, I've already done this once, and so I can't let anybody know. And so it goes. And it goes on, and I'm still trying to keep the lid on, but this time it's escalating, and I'm starting to really get out of control. I'm at the same time probably a borderline workaholic, maybe full blown at that time. But I'm at work late, you know, sometimes almost all night, and I'm there by myself with the computer, and it's too much for me to resist. And I give in. Who's it going to hurt? Who's going to know? It just continues, and it escalates, and it escalates. At some point, I look up. You know, at this time, and there still is. They're clamping down a bit, but there's lots of websites with escorts available, and it's prostitution. It's a nicer way to say it, a more acceptable, I guess. But I'm going to look. I'm going to see who's. You know, is this real? Is this really available? I look it up, and yeah, beautiful. And you know, temptation sets in, and I dial the number, and no one answers. Oh man, thank you, God. You saved me, you know, and washed that out of my mind. And that was close, boy. But once that thought was there, it didn't leave. And over time, I would make that call again, and eventually went into that. I went into paid sex and prostitution, and the shame level is now ratcheted way up. I'm feeling I'm a scumbag, you know. I'm worthless. You know, it's not. At that point, it's no one can know. There's no coming back, right? No one can know. And my wife goes away for a weekend, and I'm out seeking sex again, and she comes home, and she discovers what I've been up to, and you can probably imagine what this is like, and my mind, it's over, and somehow she manages to say, I'm with you, we're going to work on this, we're going to work through this, and with that grace, I knew that this had to be it. I could not fail again. And and so we started on that process. And one thing we thought we knew was that nobody can know. We've got to beat this. We've got to get victory over this. These are words we used. And we really ratcheted down. Heather felt convicted, and she went into a bit of a policing mode, I guess you'd say, you know, very, very driven, felt that this was almost her responsibility to fix me, and I'm trying hard, and it's just not working, and over time, I relapse again, quickly back into the same patterns, and unbelievable that I would do that, but I did go back into the same patterns, and on I think it was February 22 of 2018, I was arrested in Bellingham as part of a sting operation for men soliciting prostitutes, and I was charged with that, patronizing a prostitute, went to jail, and spending that time and that night in jail was interesting, I guess. It was that's a terrible place. Never want to be back there again. Some people are fine being there, or seem to be, but I was done. I was suicidal at the point. I didn't know where I'd go, obviously, or I assumed, obviously, the marriage is over at this point. How much can a marriage sustain? Thinking of where do I go? If I go out of here, where am I? Texas, maybe I'll go to Texas. I couldn't stay here. got pretty good name recognition in this town, in Linden, and I won't be able to stay here, that's for sure. Don't know where I'm going to go. I don't make any phone calls. I'm just lost. My dad comes and picks me up and bails me out, picks me up the next morning, and I go to his place to spend, just to go somewhere, and I'm in their basement for a few nights, and Heather comes over to see me, and I can't hardly look at anybody. It's just so full of shame that, but I talk to her, and she says, I'm here. I'll let you talk more about that. Good to hear, but, you know, give me hope at the same time. It's still too much for me. I don't know what to do with it. I had a friend that came to see me, and I didn't want to see anybody. I didn't want anybody to come by. This guy came, saw me, and he had been through some stuff in his life, different, but he had been through some stuff. And he comes in, and he's smiling at me. I think I actually looked up, and I'm like, I don't want to see you. And he just looks at me, and he's just like smiling. He's like, man, it's freedom. You're on your way to freedom. What are you talking about? This is not freedom. This is death. You know, we're on different wavelengths. And I start going through this process, and I got to get out of town. I got to get help. And so I end up going to a rehab facility down in Edmonds, Washington, called the Center, a Place for Hope. And when I get down there and walk into a place, into this rehab place, man, how far have I sank now, right? Coming out of jail, going into rehab, and I'm looking around, and a little bit, we all got our heads pretty low. This guy's, you know, here for who knows what. You know you're all there because you're really messed up, right? Whether it's eating addictions eating disorders or eating addictions, drugs, alcohol, sex. You don't know, but you know you're all there because you're pretty messed up. And it was interesting that over the week, the first week, it went from heads hanging low to starting to create some relationships. And I didn't see that coming. The classes were good. The one-on-ones with the counselors were good. This particular place had some pastors there on staff, and learning a lot of really good stuff. But the biggest thing was what was happening outside of class with the people that I'm there with that are as equally as messed up as me. And we start talking about our lives, our past, and we realize we all carry so much in common. Whatever we're struggling with, it's all coming from some place of familiarity or similarity. And deep discussions over a 4-week period, these guys know more about me than anybody around here does. And it was crazy. I had now a deeper friendship over a 4-week period than I did with guys that I had fished for 30 years with. They knew things about me, and we had cried together. I'm thinking, man, this is crazy. And God starts moving in my life, and I go through a really bad time when I'm there, where I'm questioning faith, I'm questioning God and Jesus and the whole thing, and I'm wrestling with it, and all of a sudden, but things start changing. I'm starting to feel His forgiveness, His grace. And that's really the story. I don't want to, how far into this thing am I? Been talking like an hour or two already? Something like that. 3. But that's the point that I really need to spend, I think, the most time on, or at least make sure it comes across clear. This is the hope and healing that happens. The process of going through everything after that. Coming home to Linden and getting back into work, and you know, guys are supportive of me. Man, thought I was a scumbag. Did they not read the Herald? you know, how is this? And it's just amazing. Get involved when I'm down there. I read a book, read a few books when I was down there, but one of them that jumped out at me was called Pure Desire, written by Ted Roberts. And this stuff is just, this guy's amazing. He's been through sexual addiction and problems, but and a lot more. The guy's had a hard go, and it's an amazing book. And I get out of the come back from Edmonds, and I need it coming. I need stuff. I need to be fed more and more. And I'm reading books, and I'm starting to listen to Pure Desire's podcast, and I realize that I need to get in a group, a support group. I get on Pure Desire's website, and they got a locator. You know, you punch in your zip code, and it tells you where all the groups are. They're all over the world. This map just lights up, little pin dots everywhere. I start scrolling in, because I got to find something where I'm at. And I get closer, and there's just a hole. There's a hole from the Canadian border to Everett. And everything else is, like, tight. You know, there's, like, 5 groups right across the border you can get in. There's just nothing here. Well, that's interesting. Kind of makes sense, though. We keep things under pretty tight wraps around here, right? You got a pretty good, got to keep the image up. And makes sense. What I probably should have done is gone to one of those groups up in Canada or in Everett, but what we did instead is we started our own little group, pretty small group. But we started working through some of the Pure Desire material, and it's so important. Those relationships that developed in Edmonds at rehab were the same type of relationships that now develop in group. And you care about each other. You're rooting for each other. We started our own. Like I say, we probably should have gone the other group. We weren't the best at it. We're getting better. But we've learned a lot. That's the biggest thing, I think, is, you know, with the Pure Desire material, it's both. It's tactical, I guess you'd say. You know, what are some things you can do, real practical things to keep awareness of your mental state, you know, before you get to that place of relapse, what can you identify? And there's some pieces that, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but some things that happen in your brain when you view pornography and stuff like that over a period of 10, 20 years that it takes a lot of undoing. You know, I remember when I was down in rehab and talking to Heather, and we're both, you know, trying to figure out how long is this going to take to get victory over this? You know, I like to move fast, right? Let's dig in. Can I get this done in a year? And I finally got some of an answer when I was reading Pure Desire, and it said 3 to 5 years with God's help every step of the way. I'm like, dang, I don't got time for that. I got work to do. But as time goes on, I realize God's help every step of the way is what it's all about. Yeah, you gotta dig in. You gotta work at it. It's hard. When do you get there? I don't know. I think it's kind of like, and I've heard this explained this way to me, and it made sense. You know, you're trying to get healthy, right, in a physical way, and you go to the gym, and you change your diet, and you get healthy, and, you know, you get there, and you go, great, I've done it. I'm healthy. Now I can eat all I want again, right? Now I can go back, And I believe that's what it's like for me. It's I'm going to get healthy. My mind is changing already. It's healing. But I don't think it's going to get to a point where this is a chapter that is just put away, right? This isn't like that. This will be a process of staying healthy as I get there. And I'm still working on it. Don't get me wrong. This is a process. So I wanted to talk just a little bit about hope and healing, you know, what's available. At the time when I was looking for help, like I said, I was having a hard time finding it. I didn't know where to go. I was Googling, you know, trying to find help, and I couldn't find it at the time. And there is a lot of stuff available. If there's, for men who struggle with this or any sort of unwanted sexual behavior, pure desire is a great place to start. It's good for they're pretty well-rounded. So women struggling with sexual addiction, they got programs, they got resources for that. Women struggling with the betrayal issues from a spouse or loved one, they got support for that. It's a big deal. For men struggling with the betrayal, they got that covered as well. It's a really, really good resource. They've been doing it for 30 some years. I think another question we ask, what can parents do? As parents, what is available for me? Internet protection is big, really big. Don't assume that your kids are not going to look at it or find it. For a couple reasons. One is that this industry is smart in the technology world. They will search your kids out. They know the demographics. They know their audience, and they're going to find you. They're watching what kids are looking at on, social media, those types of things, and they will target your kids. So if you're not battling this, if you're not getting really tactical about getting internet protection up in place, you're putting your head in the sand, and we learned that ourselves. It's easy to say, I'll get to that next week, or I'm not good at computers. It could be, but there's people that are. You can pay them $20, whatever. You got to do it. You have to do that. How do you talk to your kids about pornography? That's a tough one. But you can do it. There's some resources that can help you with that have helped us with that. The Covenant Eyes website is another one that has a ton of resources in there to help with that. The Pure Desire has resources. So there's a method to do it that's really, really healthy. That's really good. Pure Desire, God is at the center of what they do. And so that's important for us to be able to have a resource with that aim. Speaking of Covenant Eyes is another software that's really, really good. It's an accountability software or a filtering software. So every week a report goes out saying, here's, if you've looked at something that you shouldn't have, my accountability partner is going to get an email. You got to have a really good accountability partner that's willing to call you and say, hey, buddy. But that's a really, really good resource. It's not enough. It's important to have that, but it's kind of like changing the oil. You got to do that. That's maintenance. What can the churches do? They're doing it right here. You're allowing people to talk about it. You're welcoming it. Lower the shame level wherever you can. People that are stuck in this, they're going to be wrapped up in shame. It's hard, it's hard to get rid of that. You can't just say one word and get rid of that, but do whatever you can to lower the shame level for people that are struggling. let them know it's okay. It can be worked through. You can be helped. Provide resources. Provide support. The big one. If we really believe the statistics that 70% of our congregations are struggling, probably ought to be a small group, or probably ought to be some help for people there. Probably ought to be able to jump on the website and within a few clicks know that there's help, know where it can where you can go. I think that's really about. How am I doing on time, guys? There are some resources. I think we printed out an insert that's in your bulletins. It's got a lot of resources listed on it, stuff that we found really helpful, and there are some other stuff that I think we'll talk about if you want to come. Did you want to come up? Yeah.
Well, I wasn't really planning on talking today when this all started, transpiring for Lane to tell his testimony. And quite honestly, I was trying every which way to get out of it. But as I was arguing with myself and I was asking God to make it clear whether or not I should talk, I was kind of already working in my head what I kind of wanted to say. So, I realized that God really was asking me to talk, as scary as it is to be up here in front of all of you. Doug.